Good morning. I'm Bülent Alirza. I direct the Turkey project here at CSIS. And I'm delighted to welcome the delegation from Turkey. There are five members of the Turkish Grand National Assembly who are here. We gave the full list in the invitation of the MPs who are in town, and five of whom have been kind enough to join us today. Apologies for the late start, but I think we have a few minutes afterwards, so we will be able to go beyond 12:30. They're all here, as you can imagine, as I'm sure you know, because of the resolution that's coming up in the House Foreign Affairs Committee on Thursday. I won't eat it into the time of Chairman Mercan and the other members of the delegation who will address the issue. Clearly, this is an important enough issue in Turkish-American relations that eight members of the Turkish Parliament are here. How much of a threat is this to the U.S.-Turkish relationship? What are the implications of a vote in the committee that may or may not come up on the House floor? All these are subjects that are going to be taken up by our guests. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Chairman Murat Mercan of the ruling Justice and Development Party, who is also chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Thank you very much, Bülent. Thanks, first of all, for hosting us. We're back to Washington. Let me introduce my colleagues first, as you've done. Professor Melen, Mithat Melen, is from Nationalist Movement Party. He's an economist. And on his right, Mr. Elekta, he was the longest served ambassador to Washington and now representing the Republicans People's Party. And on Bülent's left, Şaban Dişli from our party, from the ruling party representing Sakarya area, and on his left, Abdullah Çalışkan, again representing our party, the Kırşehir area. Now, the reason why we are here is, as Bülent said, to discuss with our colleagues and counterparts in the Congress regarding the Thursday's resolution that would be come up on Thursday, the so-called the Armenian genocide resolution. Now, I'm not going to take up too much of your time. I'll just give you a brief overview of what I think, and then probably hand over the microphone to the opposition representatives. Then maybe through Q&A we're going to explore, we're going to open up the debate.
One clarification. We are on the record. If you wish to go off the record, I will inform you.
Maybe later during the question at Q&A, or I'll let you know. Now, very straightforwardly, Turkish-American relationship has never been so at its peak today. The level of relationship that the two countries have right now can only be categorized as model partnership, where the two countries' administration work very closely on regional issues, on strategic issues, and they have joint consultation, ongoing consultation on all these issues, whether it be Iraq, Middle East, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, the Caucasus, and even the Balkans. In all these areas, as far as I know, and as far as we were informed by the Turkish foreign minister, we have excellent relations. I'd like to discuss them with you in depth, shall there be any further question on those issues. But all I can tell you that the level of cooperation we have at the administrative level on all these fronts have never been so good and have never been detailed until now. We'll get to the specifics later on. Secondly, As you all know, our way of rapprochement to regional matters is a comprehensive one. Any change in the equation should benefit first for the regional actors, and at the same time should help global actors benefit from it. Now, the reason I said this is very straightforward. Our foreign policy paradigm is to help contribute peace and stability in our immediate region where we have certain influence and soft power ability, with an aim of trying to solve the problems, trying to help solving the problems, rather than creating an increasing tension. Our objective is to help solving the problems. Now, that goes the same with the Caucasus, which would be our immediate attention. Now, when it comes to Caucasus, there are too many equations in the Caucasus. It's Armenia-Azerbaijan equation, it's Turkish-Armenia equation, it's Georgia-Russia, it's Ukraine-Russia, Georgia-Ukraine, very complicated and complex. Unless you have a comprehensive approach to that region, any change in statu quo might jeopardize the strategic interests of the West. Now, to give you a simple idea, take for instance Nabucco project, where it is almost vital for Europe to get Nabucco, to benefit from Nabucco project. In order to supply gas to Nabucco project, you need Azerbaijan. Because in order to get gas of Caspian Sea, you have three options. Either you use Russia route, or Azeri route, or Iran, where the main interest of Europe is to diversify its energy resources. There are in fact two options left: Azerbaijan or Iran. So the whole equation has to be thought of thoroughly. Any change in statu quo has to benefit from, all people have to benefit from it. Now, with that understanding, Turkish administration has signed two protocols with Armenia with good intent, because Turkish-Armenian relationship should be better, and we hope that if we implement a rapprochement policy to Armenia, it might lead to solving other bilateral issues, it might facilitate other bilateral issues to be solved. We are still, at least as the administration or as the ruling party, we are still on the same view, because the opposition might have different view anyhow. We are still of the same view. Turkish-Armenian rapprochement is important for the region, with a view that everyone will benefit from it. It should be a win-win situation rather than lose-all situation. This is why Turkish administration has signed the protocol, send it to the parliament, and our committee will have to ratify it before it goes to the floor. It's in our door, in other words. It's in our drawer, in other words. Now, meanwhile, I don't want to get into the details of the developments vis-à-vis the Armenia, There are three concerns with Turkish-Armenian relationship. One is opening the border. The other one is establishing diplomatic ties with Armenia. And the third one is, you know, to sort out what have happened in 1915 through a mechanism called Subcommittee on History, History Subcommittee. With a view of, if you look at the protocols, you would see them, with a view of reaching a common understanding on those issues, including the history. We always have been open on this matter. All we asked until now, and we will continue to do so, rather than the politicians, let the historians, experts, intellectuals of independence come together, study the archives, all, including the archives in Boston and elsewhere. And whatever the finding is, at the end of the day, we are ready to assume the consequence. And that is bipartisan approach. And I think this is fair. Nevertheless, this debate will continue and will go on anyhow. Now, at this juncture, while there is this process going with a lot of difficulties, I can tell you there are difficulties, especially after Armenian Constitutional Court has taken up a decision regarding how to interpret this protocol. But despite all these difficulties, the process goes on. Now, in the middle of the process, there comes the Congress Foreign Relations Committee decided to take up a resolution which would, you know, which would claim that genocide took place in 1915. We oppose this resolution on two fronts. First and foremost, while the two administrations, I underline it, have signed the protocols, at least with a doubt, with a request or with a need to clarify what have happened in 1915. Of course, the two sides have not changed their position. Armenia still claims that, you know, genocide took place, and Turkey claims that it didn't take place. But to say the least, by signing these two protocols, both administrations have agreed, have accepted that their claims need to be proven, or whatever, by signing the protocols. Because by signing the protocols, they agreed on establishing history commission with a common perspective, with a common understanding on that issue. While we are in this process, and the process is not stalled yet, I am having difficulty in understanding why the Congress is taking up this matter. It would be very detrimental to the process. It would jeopardize the process. I don't know whether the Congress has that right. Especially considering the Armenian diaspora here, and especially assuming that Armenian diaspora care the interest of their folks in Armenia. And secondly, while there is so intense dialogue and cooperation between Turkey and the United States, and knowing that how emotional Turkish people are, as we speak right now, you know, we have this a lot of press coverage on this matter. Since yesterday, I was on TV several times. while we have excellent relationship with Turkey and Turkey and the United States, why the Congress is taking up this issue is of concern to me as a friend of America and as a person who want to propose and promote peace and prosperity in the region for all, not for some. Brent, thank you very much. Maybe I should stop here, not taking up much time.
Would you like to invite the next member of the delegation?
Mr. Elekta, would you like to? We need to follow the major opposition and then the second opposition.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It is a pleasure to be here and to have this opportunity to address this distinguished audience. As my colleague has said, the approval of H. Resolution 252 will inevitably affect Turkish-U.S. relations. With the approval of the said resolution, an issue which does not relate to the national interest of both Turkey and the United States will harm Turkey's and United States' national interest. The outcome would only serve the interest of radical Armenian organizations. It wouldn't serve also the interest of Armenia. But here, I would like to bring to your attention an important fact, and it is that the Obama administration, unlike its predecessors, has not opposed congressional resolution on the Armenian genocide. We have noticed that Secretary of State Mrs. Clinton made no direct reference to the resolution when she was asked on February 26 whether its approval would have negative effects on U.S.-Turkish relations. House Foreign Affairs Committee will vote on the resolution on March 4, and it is strange that Obama administration has not even moved its little finger to prevent it. I think that Obama administration's attitude is a clear break from the past, because I recall very vividly that in October 2007, President George Bush personally lobbied members of the House Foreign Relations Committee to vote against the resolution. He furthermore made a televised public statement against the resolution. So why Obama administration is acting in such a way? There can be only one reason for that. The administration would like to force Turkey to get its parliament ratify the two protocols signed by Turkey and Armenia. The ratification of the protocols will lead to the opening of the Armenian-Turkish common border. But it is clear that Turkey will not open its border with Armenia unless Nagorno-Karabakh problem has been solved along the ways of the United Nations Security Council resolutions. Indeed, Prime Minister Erdogan, on 13th May 2009, addressing the Azerbaijan Parliament, undertook the following commitment, and I quote from him. Ipsissima verba, he said, there is a cause and effect relation here. Occupation of Karabakh is the cause here, and closing of the border is the effect. It is impossible for us to open the border unless that occupation ends. This is what he said. So, the difficulties do not stop here, because the ruling of the Armenian Constitutional Court jeopardized the future of the protocols. The Armenian Constitutional Court, although ruled that protocols were compatible with the Armenian constitution, it also issued a reasoned decision which completely revised the protocols. The court basically rewrote the protocols, invalidating everything Turkey achieved during the negotiations. And as you all know, this situation compelled the Foreign Ministry of Turkey to issue a statement noting that the decision of the Armenian Constitutional Court impaired the letter and the spirit of the protocols and undermined the very reason for negotiating these protocols. So, very shortly, Turkey has three concerns. The first is that the court says that the interpretation and application of the protocols should be in compliance with the Armenian Constitution and the paragraph 11 of the Armenian Declaration of Independence, which states, Armenian Declaration of Independence states, that the Republic of Armenia stands in support of the task of achieving international recognition of the 1915 genocide in Ottoman Turkey and Western Armenia. So, as you see, Armenian Declaration of Independence characterizes Eastern Anatolia as Western Armenia, and as such, beholds that this area is a part of Armenia. Armenian Constitution also espouses and asserts territorial claims against Turkey. Now, the second point is that as the Armenian Declaration of Independence and the Armenian Constitution proclaim the indisputable nature of genocide for the Armenians, the Armenian Constitutional Court decision prevents any possibility of joint historical research for shedding light on the events of 1915, as this would contradict the provision of the paragraph 11 of the Armenian Declaration of Independence. This position of the Armenian Constitutional Court also constitutes a distortion of the agreement reached by the negotiators as regards the mandate of the Historical Fact-Finding Evaluation Commission. So it is absurd, I think, for the Armenians to think that they can make peace with Turkey while they are insulting and accusing the Turks of having committed the worst crime. Now, thirdly, the Armenian Constitutional Court's decision holds that Moscow and Kars treaties are not valid and not binding for Armenia, it does attempts to annul some of the provisions of the treaties I mentioned, granting important rights and prerogatives to Turkey. The first of them is that both treaties recognize Turkey's right of being a guarantor of Nakhchivan's status. And secondly, Kars Treaty provides complete immunity to the contracting parties for the crimes and offenses committed during the course of the war on the Caucasian front. So, as it will be seen from the above explanations, Armenian Constitutional Court's decision contradicts and distorts the provisions of the protocols agreed upon between the parties. What Armenia attempted to do contravenes the international law, because according to Article 9 of the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, the protocols signed by the two foreign ministers is authentic and definitive. It has to be submitted to the ratification of the parliaments without any change. So under the conditions, the protocols do not have the slightest chance of approval by the Turkish parliament. The Turkish government also would not think for one moment to take the protocols to the parliament, to the Turkish parliament. The bottom line of what I'm going to say is that we expect the U.S. administration to see the realities and to avoid coercive persuasion methods to force Turkey to ratify the protocols. And secondly, the passage of Resolution 252 would seriously harm Turkish-U.S. relations. It would have serious, disruptive consequences. We expect the administration to be active on preventing the passage of the resolution because, as everybody knows, in the city, the best lobbies in Washington is the administration. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Almost every year, at the same time, March 5th or 4th, we are here in CSIS to discuss these issues. And I don't know. Maybe you got fed up with these, but I really want to take the point from another view because, you know, being an economist, and we try to see the things differently. First of all, I'm coming from a family that we used to be in one, which is Eastern Turkey, and my family should have been deported and should leave one in 1915 because of the first Armenian, then the Russian invasion. So we had to come to Western Turkey and had to live there, all my family. And I have never been brought up like this, being enemies and having animosity against Armenians all my life. And last year here, when we were here, I think in this particular room, also my party was fiercely opposing the Armenian resolution, which is this protocol, those two protocols. I was a bit looking to things differently because, especially in my constituency in Istanbul, there are 50,000 Armenians living, coming from really Armenia themselves, and you know, have a job there. And they, you know, in Turkey altogether, there are 70,000 Armenians living and trying to get their life on and live their life, and they are perfectly well. But they are, of course, not working legally. Look, like a resolution like this going to pass through this parliament here would first affect those Armenians living in my constituency. Maybe the most people who are going to afraid was those people living in my constituency, because there are many things said, and every year there are very many legal and other aspects we could talk about, but we really forget here the people, because still we are doing trade with Armenia, we have got ties with Armenia. You cannot, it is not secret anymore. But why in the United States, why every time especially the Congress is, you know, muddling with these things, and because of votes, I know, in some constituencies. But I myself, and we all here, we need votes too. And I'm, you know, extremely unhappy if I go back and explain it to my party, then to my voters back in Istanbul. If a resolution like this passes, I know these all these, you know, things, the legal things and diplomatic things and so on. But the most important thing, the people. In Turkey, people are very sensitive about these issues. And normalization process. The process was, everybody was against it at the very beginning. And this was the government a bit initiative. And they did it. And doing this, I think even the government, even Mr. Prime Minister talks like my president, same way. So, you know, you should be careful about thinking more human than ever. In past, something had happened, as I told you, my family, we suffered all these. And I don't know who killed the other one, and I don't care much. But this is the 21st century, and we really should live another life and really should have more relations. And our main aim is to have, you know, no problem with our neighbors, with our eight neighbors, including Armenia. But if we take this issue every time to the table and we hurt the relations with the United States, our relations, because five out of four problems of the United States maybe is with Turkey, like Caucasus, Iraq, Afghanistan, now the economy, the energy security, which Europe is, you know, becoming more sick. And after the Greece, maybe Ireland, maybe other two. Spain and Italy will have problems, and Turkey also, after this global crisis, which also we have talked these last year. But nothing changes, you know. We every time say the same things, and we still come here, and we still hear the same things. I know that you are going to ask many questions, and we are going to be on the same point, square one. So I think we should look at it differently, more humanly, because if something happens, a resolution passes, if my people back in Istanbul fires those 50,000, who is going to take the responsibility here? You know, because even the police director of Istanbul phones me from time to time and asks me what he should do about those 50,000 Armenians in my constituency working. I mean,
Illegal workers.
Certainly, I have done that.
Okay.
I think I want to finish up to this point. Thank you.